WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Wendy Gillette. The Department of Justice says a man originally from Colorado was detained today at JFK Airport in New York, accused of trying to firebomb the U.S. Embassy branch in Tel Aviv last week. Reporter Linda Gradstein from Jerusalem.
Joseph Neumeier, a dual U.S.-German citizen, arrived in Israel in April. Last week, he went to the branch of the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv carrying a backpack. He approached a guard and spat on him. When the guard attempted to detain Neumeier, he fled the scene but left his backpack containing several Molotov cocktails.
He's also accused of making threatening posts online, including against President Trump. The director of the UN World Food Program says more aid is badly needed in Gaza.
Cindy McCain says the situation is dire at best.
We have 500,000 people inside of Gaza that are extremely food insecure and could be on the verge of famine if we don't help bring them back from that.
Speaking on CBS's Face the Nation, McCain said as bad as conditions are for the Palestinians in Gaza, they're even worse for the people of Sudan.
Sudan is the largest humanitarian crisis on the planet right now, and we've got to pay attention to it.
McCain says millions in Sudan are facing near starvation. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
5 years ago today, George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis police custody. His brother spoke at an event in Houston.
We can never give up, because all you need to know, if you need just a little greatness inside of you, everybody has it, but sometimes you need that little push.
At George Floyd Square in Minneapolis, events are being held this weekend. WCCO Radio's Susie Jones is there.
Minneapolis City Councilmember Andrea Jenkins says it is a bittersweet time with some new businesses opening in the area, but no permanent memorial this many years later.
It's extremely frustrating.
Her wish for the site is that it becomes a place of healing.
That's my ultimate goal, is to have peace, love, and beauty at the intersection of George Floyd Square.
Susie Jones for CBS News, Minneapolis.
Tomorrow is not just the end of a holiday weekend. Memorial Day is also a time to honor our fallen soldiers. David Crowell with the Whitechapel Memorial Park Cemetery in Michigan says it's important.
I don't think it's ever enough, but we try to do our part. If everybody can do a little bit to remember, to take a minute, come out to our cemetery and pay a tribute to those who died, then we've accomplished something for Memorial Day.
Alex Palou is the first Spanish driver to win the Indy 500. He has won five of his first six races this season. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. May is Lyme Awareness Month, and we now have the highest number of Lyme disease cases in Wisconsin history. Judith Ruiz Branch has what you should know.
There are 16 confirmed tick species in Wisconsin, but experts are focused on the black-legged tick or the deer tick in the transmission of Lyme disease. Experts recommend taking preventative measures when spending time outdoors, like wearing protective clothing and using insect repellent. They add you should perform tick checks and shower after any outdoor activity. State entomologist Dr. Zia Lee says some ticks, especially the younger ones, may be harder to spot.
Those are usually the ones that we associate with a lot of the cases of Lyme disease or tick-borne diseases, most active in June and July.
The number of Lyme disease cases has tripled over the past 15 years, according to state data. Deer ticks have spread from northwestern Wisconsin to every county in the state over the past 30 years. PJ Leash from the University of Wisconsin-Madison says the increasing prevalence of this species has led to an emerging health threat.
They are still spreading outwards. They seem to be moving into newer areas. In some cases, that can be more like suburban backyards, areas where we haven't seen them historically, and they're still potentially expanding, and we don't know when they are going to stop.
He says if you're bit by a tick in Wisconsin, there's about a 50-50 chance that it's carrying Lyme disease. He emphasizes the risk of Lyme disease transmission increases with the duration of tick attachment, which is why prevention and detection are so important. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear, a low around 44. Memorial Day Monday, sunshine with a high near 58. Monday night, clouds and 48. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, some afternoon showers possible with a high near 58. Tuesday night, rain likely and 50.
It's 64 at our studios.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Todd Alba will be here to break down all the news of the weekend. Kathy Giorgio, whose book has been banned in Waukesha, will join us. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. First up, we go to Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. And this week, the Schwabinator welcomed on Bruce Jarcho. Bruce shares his favorite memories of his friend George Wendt, famous for playing Norm on the hit television show Cheers.
Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who's had a paper route for 25 years but never collected, Pete Schwabe.
Well, welcome back. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we are about to start Act 2. Right now, I'm very excited to welcome a good friend of mine to the show. He was sort of a guy I really looked up to because I knew I wanted to go into show business, and Bruce is a little bit older than me, and he was already there, and he's a very good friend, and he joins us now on the stream. Bruce, how are you?
Hello, Pete. How are you?
Great to hear your voice, buddy. I'm doing well.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
First, let me say, I'm very sorry for your loss. I knew you were friends with George Wendt, but I had no idea how close you guys were until I saw all your social media posts with just such great memories.
We formed a brotherhood, sisterhood kind of deal with that original company and the number of people that we worked with when we first got on the main stage at Second City. And even before that, during workshops and touring companies and stuff. And it's still a close knit group even to this day with, you know, Tim and George and I and Danny Breen, the late Danny Breen. Noni Newton is also in there. Audrey Neenan, a bunch of people that Tim Kazurinsky, of course, and Mary Gross. We're all you know, in a state of shock, really, because this is like a brother passing.
Yeah. Well, I'm very sorry for your loss, Bruce, and I appreciate you taking out some time tonight. I mostly know George Wendt from Cheers, and he was so great. And I was reading a story about before you came on, before the show tonight, about how they found him, and he was on another show, and he auditioned, and they said, we like this guy so much, we're going to let him be on both shows, and the other one ended up getting canceled. But can you talk a little bit about, like, it must be so great to see, when you come up with a group like that, and you develop this bond, what's it like when one of you has, like, success like that?
Well, it's first of all, we root for everybody. Yeah. There's no real envy or anything going on. And I think most of us took it as an opportunity to sponge off George now that he was going to be successful. In terms of, Nancy reminded me of, you can kind of follow George through his dedication to the barbecue. And we all knew that with the series regular on a primetime show, that the barbecue would be something rather special. And I even had the opportunity. He took me out barbecue shopping right after he got Cheers. And I went, really? I mean, you know, I can just buy a Weber or something. Oh, no, he's after the top of the line, you know, the Cadillac of barbecues. And we went around to all of these hardware stores in the valley out in California. And he couldn't make up his mind. And eventually he got, I think he put it together himself. He got a bunch of modules that had like spigots for beer. He had a smoker. He had the greatest barbecue setup I've ever seen. And this comes from a guy who, when we first started out, and he had a lousy little apartment on Armitage Avenue in Chicago, and he invited Nancy and I over one February evening after a pretty late night. He says, come on over, Bernadette and I are going to fire up the barbecue. And I'm going, well, Jesus, George, there's like 3 feet of snow out there. And what he'd done was he had shoveled the snow. He'd shoveled a patch in his backyard and literally barbecued ribs at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And this was such a common occurrence for him. I think the his neighbors thought that there was some sort of cult going on in his apartment. But, you know, he just kept buying better and better barbecues the more successful he got. And that's what we were all looking forward to, because he used to host a lot of parties.
It's those stories that I've seen on social media, and I had no idea how many friends of mine were friends of his, and just that down-to-earth, very humble guy. He, in an article I read yesterday, Bruce, George Wendt was quoted as again, being very humble and saying he was, I don't know if he was referring to the main stage at Second City or not, but he was there for 6 years, and he says he called himself the worst improver ever. Is that possible?
Well, I'm sure George is a lot better than the worst ever, but he did really enjoy those scenes where he didn't have too much dialogue. Because he could steal a scene just by mugging. He was his improvisation skills were his mugging, his little spit takes, his side takes, his, you know, his reaction shots. He was a master at that. While he didn't, you know, Tim was a master. Tim Kazurinsky was a master of the jumpy one-liners that had save a scene, and George was the character who stole every scene just by looking at the audience funny, breaking the fourth wall, etc.
For those of you listening who don't know who Tim Kazurinsky is, I think Tim wrote about Last Night, but he was also in it, and he was very funny as John Belushi's friend with the British accent. And it's just such a brilliant comedian, and you guys all are great. I was talking about your role earlier, Bruce, when you were on Seinfeld, and the doctor who diagnosed George's lip still cracks me up. Just a talented bunch of people. But George Wendt also, I thought this was great. He's, again, just showing what a humble Midwestern guy he is. He goes, anybody could have played Norm. Not true, obviously. But he said it was the writing on that show. They served up gems and they made everything easy. Like, that's just another testament to what a good dude he seems like he was.
Right. And also a testament to the show, too, because they saw in George someone that they could write for. And it's really every actor's dream is to get on a show where the writers and the producers all understand your person, the type of work that comes so easily to you, and they write for that. And they did that on Cheers for George. It was a pleasure to watch him there. I mean, he was in his element. Jesus, he walks in the door, he says the funniest line in the show, sits down and pretends to drink a beer all day.
That's so great. My guest is actor-writer Bruce Darko. He is joining us for a few minutes tonight to talk about his good friend, George Wendt, who just passed away a couple of days ago. I'm sure it doesn't even seem real still, Bruce, but this is so great that you guys, I didn't know this. I knew you were in My Bodyguard because when I was a kid and I saw this guy I had played wiffle ball or softball with in Three Lakes, Wisconsin in a movie, I was like, get out of here. How did that happen? It was magical. And I was reading yesterday, George Wendt is in that movie too. Did you guys have scenes together or were you there on the same days?
No, we didn't. Actually, Hollywood found Second City. This is shortly after Jane Byrne became the mayor and opened up Chicago to Hollywood Productions. Mayor Daley and even Bolandic after him did not want any or much production. They made it very difficult for Hollywood to come to Chicago and start shooting movies. Jane Byrne said, fine, let's go. And, you know, the Blues Brothers came and a bunch of other movies. But they started trying to find local talent in Chicago, and they knew it was here because we have a great number of actors in the just the local theaters are just boiling over with talent,
right?
And they came to the Second City and they got me, they got Audrey, and they got George, and they got Tim, all for this movie called Somewhere in Time. And then there was My Bodyguard came around. That Somewhere in Time is with Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour.
Yeah, Mackinac Island. Then
My Bodyguard came around with me and George and Tim. And there might have probably someone else from our company got in there too. But we were just like, we were being discovered, you know?
Wow. That's fantastic.
And we happened to be on the main stage at the time.
Bruce, I still remember one of your lines in that movie when Chris Makepeace gets out of the limo and runs away and you said, the cops don't even come to this neighborhood at night.
It was so much fun.
It was
a great experience. I remember asking somebody who was in the business, I said, now, if you got one hint, one hint for being an actor on the set? And the guy goes, make friends with the sound guy. I went, what do you mean? He goes, well, you know, most actors are either too loud or too soft or something like that. You want to make sure that you're heard, but you're not like blowing everybody off the set. So make friends with the sound guy was my first bit of advice.
Well, it obviously paid off. Well done. Just as a personal thing, Bruce, when I lived in L.A. and we would and it was always fun. I would see you and Nancy at Gelson's. And I just love that, seeing a little bit of a home out in L.A. But we would trick or treat. Good friends of ours lived in Studio City just down the street from, I believe George Wendt lived there, because he would open the door sometimes and hand out candy. This is Norm from Cheers. And, you know, Jimmy Kimmel's crew is walking through the neighborhood. It was just a festive atmosphere. And George Wendt's kids were opening in. They were messing with the kids and having fun. It just seemed it was such a great vibe from the whole family.
Yeah, he made sure that he was surrounded by fun. He put in a he put in a basketball court at one point, and poor guy. He put in a basketball court shortly before his knees started to give out, so he couldn't shoot around. But everybody else came over and either swam in his pool or shot baskets in his backyard. Or then he was mostly by the barbecue. What am I talking about? So
yeah, right. We've got about a minute left, Bruce. Again, really appreciate your time. I know you're going through kind of a difficult time right now. You and
it is
Nancy.
It is hard, but you know what, Pete? Whenever we get together and we talk about George, we're all like sad and you know, heavy hearted and everything, but immediately a funny story will pop in and everybody will be laughing within 15 seconds of getting together. There'll be something about what George did. We were there when George did this and, you know, George had a way of this and that, and it would just crack us all up. And so we'd be laughing by the end. We're supposed to be sitting there crying, but we end up laughing.
That's so great. And it's just what it's all about. It's magical, you know, how someone's memories stay with you and you're just so thankful that you knew this person. That's so great. Are you guys doing your stage show still?
Yeah, we did it. We did it again in New York here. We did it down in the East Village. And we're looking to do it. I know we're talking with some other theaters now that we can get a kind of a continual gig to do it. It's kind of tough schlepping it around on one night stand. So we're going to look for a place that we can maybe do it two or three times a week.
Okay. Been there, still there. I can't wait to see it. I know you guys took it to Chicago, I think last summer, but you got to bring it to Wisconsin, man. Bring it to the people.
Madison would be a perfect place for it. I got a friend that lives there and I think, you know, he couldn't produce it, but you know, we could call him a producer and then he could make some calls. maybe we could, get him involved.
Bruce, say hi to Nancy. Thank you again, buddy. Hang in there. And you're in our thoughts. Thank you, Bruce. Okay. That's Bruce Jarko. A handful of people who has appeared on Seinfeld multiple times, and such a talented guy, Bruce Jarko, and a great guy all around. So we got some text to read. If you want to get in a text on who is your favorite movie or TV badass, get that in quick, because we will not be reading texts after the news at the bottom of the hour. Hey, this is fun, folks. We're talking art. We're going to talk travel after the news. We talked a little bit about George Wendt, and more to come. We're coming right back after this short break. This is Pete Schwabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
Mark your calendars for heart-pumping, exhilarating action at the 2025 Queen Marinette's Run the River Power Boat Races in Marinette, Wisconsin on June 7th and 8th. The action will be nonstop as these high-octane boats reach speeds of over 105 miles per hour. Located on the Menominee River, you'll be seated up close so you can witness all of the high adrenaline drama. The races are free and perfect for the entire family. Racing will be fierce with up to 100 powerboats and 18 heats a day. Races kick off on Saturday and Sunday at 12:30 p.m. and run throughout the entire day. It's Queen Marinette's Run the River Powerboat Races, June 7th and 8th. Free for the whole family. You won't want to miss this awesome event. For more information, head to fishonmarinette.com and click on the events page or contact the Marinette Welcome Center at 715-732-4333.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the Maggie Dawn Show. Judge Chris Taylor joins the Maggie Dawn Show to discuss why she is running to be the next justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. In her first radio interview since announcing her candidacy, Judge Taylor tells Maggie her time as an attorney, legislator, circuit court judge, and judge at the Court of Appeals gives her a unique perspective and has taught her how to work across the aisle. To listen to all of the shows featured on the Civic Media Spotlight, download the Civic Media app available on the Google Play or Apple App Store. Or listen to the shows after the fact as a podcast at civicmedia.us on Spotify or Apple Music. Now, here's Maggie Dawn.
It's not Cecilia. Judge Chris Taylor, she's running for Supreme Court. We've got her first live interview right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome, 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 Judge Chris Taylor. So excited to have you. How are you doing? Big, exciting day today with the announcement.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Maggie. I'm really excited. I have really anticipated this day and announcing my candidacy for the state Supreme Court. And I'm really heartened by all the support that I've received. But really what this race is about the people of Wisconsin and the kind of justice they deserve on the state Supreme Court. You know, someone who puts them first and not the big special interests and the billionaires. It's really government's about the people of the state of Wisconsin, and that's the kind of judge I am, and that's the kind of justice I would be.
I want to ask you, this last race was so contentious, as was the Supreme Court race before it. More money, more mudslinging. It has gotten so fraught. Why in God's green earth, would you want to get into this kind of what is some brass knuckled partisan, seemingly more and more partisan every cycle when we've got Supreme Court justices up for election? Why throw your hat in the ring? Why subject yourself to what will be a very long campaign?
Well, look, Maggie, I have really focused my entire 30-year legal career as an attorney, as a legislator, and as a judge on protecting people's freedoms, protecting people's rights. I want to continue to do that kind of work as a justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. My priority as a judge is that Wisconsinites get access to justice in the fairest, most impartial, most independent way possible. You know, ever since I was a little kid, a little girl, I really saw that the law is a way to improve people's lives. And all I've wanted to ever be was an attorney. And I dreamt of being a judge because I thought you could just do so much good for people. So I'm really committed to that. I really think government needs to work for the people of Wisconsin. The judiciary needs to be about the people of the state. And, you know, I'm excited to do it. I know it's a long road, but I have great faith and confidence in Wisconsinites, and I'm just really heartened by all the support that I've received so far.
I wanted to ask you, as you mentioned, Judge Taylor, you've been a Democratic legislator, you are a lawyer for Planned Parenthood, you also serve policy director, and I asked now Justice, or soon to be sworn in Justice Crawford, now Judge Crawford, the same question when she was running. How do you assure Wisconsin voters that you can set aside your prior advocacy for a particular organization and set of issues, and as a Democratic legislator, to be an apolitical jurist on the Wisconsin Supreme Court?
Well, Maggie, look, I've been a judge now for 5 years. I've been a circuit court judge, and now I'm on the Court of Appeals, and I understand the difference between a legislator and a judge. As a judge, I look at the law, I apply the law to the facts of the case, and I try to do it in the most fair way possible so people are heard, so people feel like they are getting justice, so people feel like it's a fair process. So that's what I've done for 5 years. It's just a different role. But I have to say, being a legislator is a great, great advantage to me as a judge. I understand the legislative process, a lot of what we do, a lot of what I do as a judge, a lot about what judges do is interpret the law. We have to know legislative intent. We have to look at statutes very closely. So I really think it makes me a unique candidate in that way. I have looked at the law from so many different angles. As an attorney, I was in private practice the first 6 years of being in my legal career, so I've also been in private practice. And then, as you acknowledged, going over to Planned Parenthood and doing law and policy for them, then in the legislature, being a circuit court judge where people were in front of me every single day, and now at the Court of Appeals, I just have a really unique background and an experience that really has taught me that people are the center of the laws. People are what matters. So every case I decide, I'm always thinking about who's this going to impact, who's this going to affect. And I'm proud of the things I've worked on. I think that the values that I have are reflected and are held throughout the state of Wisconsin. I don't think it's at all unusual to feel that women and families should make their own personal private health care decisions. I agree with the state Supreme Court's decision that we had unfair maps that discounted people's votes. These are values that I hold very, very, very dear to me. But I have shown how independent I can be. I was independent in the legislature. I worked with Democrats, Republicans. I didn't always agree with everything, but I'll tell you, I have always been committed to working out problems, to reaching across to other people who may not see things exactly how I do, and coming up with solutions to people's problems. And that's what government really should be. Certainly, that's what the judiciary should be. That's what we do every single day.
Folks, that is current sitting Wisconsin Appeals Court Judge Chris Taylor, now newly announced candidate for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. We've got about 30 seconds left, Judge. Why don't you tell the people of Wisconsin, who may be the ones to elect you, something about you that they don't know and can't find on your campaign website, chrisforjustice.com.
Okay, let's see. I love dogs.
She loves dogs. I love dogs too.
I have a black Labrador named Ollie.
Judge, we're going to have to get your Ollie and my Finny together. Keep it locked right here.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
CBS News Brief. The Department of Justice says a 28-year-old with American and German citizenship, Joseph Neumeier, tried to firebomb the U.S. Embassy branch in Tel Aviv, Israel, last week. Linda Gradstein from Jerusalem.
Attorney General Pamela Bondi said Neumeier, armed with potentially lethal devices, sought to cause chaos and destruction at the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv.
The director of the UN World Food Program, Cindy McCain, says Palestinians are badly in need of food in Gaza, motivating theft.
This doesn't have anything to do with Hamas or any kind of organized crime or anything. It has simply to do with the fact these people are starving to death.
Tennis great Rafa Nadal received a plaque as part of a celebration of his career at the French Open. This from TNT.
I've experienced everything over these 20 years. I've had incredible rivals like Andy, Novak, and of course, Roger.
CBS News Brief, I'm Wendy Gillette.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Brewers leave PNC Park with a W. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, a back-and-forth game today at Pittsburgh's PNC Park. The Brewers on top with a 6-5 win over the Pirates. Trevor McGill with the save in the ninth inning, able to get the Pirates' Adam Frazier to ground out after Frazier had two singles, a double, and three runs batted in. So the Brewers split the four-game series, two games apiece with the Pirates. Tomorrow, the crew will be at home at American Family Field to open a three-game series against the Boston Red Sox. Game time on Memorial Day, 1:10. Scheduled to throw out the first pitch, Packers quarterback Jordan Love. The Packers begin OTA practices on Tuesday. Racing. Indy 500 with its first ever winner from Spain with just 14 laps to go and low on fuel. Alex Palou passed Marcus Ericsson for the lead on turn two and took the checkered flag. The race start time delayed by wind and showers earlier today in Indianapolis. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear, a low around 44. Memorial Day Monday, sunshine with a high near 58. Monday night, clouds and 48. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, some afternoon showers possible with a high near 58. Tuesday night, rain likely and 50.
It's 64 at our studios.
This Memorial Day weekend, the staff of Century Companies invite you to join them in pausing to remember the price others have paid to keep us free. Specializing in fence, traffic, and security solutions, Century Companies is a family-owned and family-focused safety and security contractor in Pewaukee with over 100 years of industry experience. To learn more, visit their website, centurycompanies.us. That's centurycompanies.us. Century Companies, helping build a better and safer world.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The independent state legislature theory met a skeptical U.S. Supreme Court in 2023 in Moore v. Harper, a North Carolina gerrymandering case. The Michigan GOP tried to employ the fringe theory to undo Michigan's Question 2 citizen ballot initiative, but the U.S. Supreme Court refused the case May 19th. Proponents argue the independent state legislature theory gives legislatures ultimate power over federal election rules based on a widely dismissed interpretation of the election clause of the U.S. Constitution. In North Carolina's case, the legislature admitted it gerrymandered but said it had the final say and the courts and governor had no jurisdiction. In 2022, Michigan's Promote the Vote Question 2 ballot initiative passed 60% to 40%. It enshrined multiple voting rights in the state constitution, including 9 days of early voting, guaranteeing the right to vote without harassment, offering a permanent vote-by-mail list, and mandating drop boxes and several other important voting reforms. 11 GOP legislators tried to invalidate the ballot question using the ISL theory. They argued that only the state legislature could make election law, not those pesky constituents. The Michigan Supreme Court dismissed the case in April 2024, and on May 19th, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear the case. We have more on ISL and the Michigan case at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time for a very special Memorial Day episode. We talk to Jeremy Lyon from the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs on our cemeteries, honoring our veterans, and more. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. Up next, we'll go to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. With the Wisconsin legislature working to craft a new state budget, the Assembly Education Committee could be playing a key role in making sure schools are properly funded, safe, and excelling. Instead, committee member Christian Phelps from Eau Claire outlines how the panel is off course dealing with culture war issues, sideshows, and anything other than showing leadership for Wisconsin kids.
Welcome back. 7:35 now, live from Chippewa Falls. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Greg Bach is down in Radio Park, where earlier Greg and I were talking to Melissa Kay from our Civic Media station in Wisconsin Rapids, and we learned from Melissa that she wants to get a pigeon, and all of the accoutrements associated with pigeon keeping. And on the text line, Matt from Germantown asks, is she going to use it to send notes to people?
Yeah.
And that is the challenge I think I would lay out for Melissa. Is this just for a pet companionship, or is there going to be something utilitarian? Are we going to get some value out of this pigeon, you know, besides a potential very small, you know, dinner at some point if the pigeon
I want to make sure this
you.
Pigeon is worth it. Send me messages. She also let us know about the whole pigeon culture, pigeon pants, pigeon mamas, pigeon cages, all the whole thing.
And I just did not know if she, I just picture her back in Wisconsin Rapids right now going, I can't believe they bought all this. I can't believe pigeon pants. Who does that? We did. We're into it. Hook, line, and sinker. We are totally invested. So Matt in Germantown, good question. So again, add it to our list, Greg, of things to talk to Melissa about next week as we continue on Pigeon Watch. The Melissa Kay edition.
2025.
All right. Let's turn to our homeroom segment now and talk to State Representative Christian Phelps from Eau Claire, a member of the Assembly Education Committee, and friends of the show will recall joining us quite frequently on behalf of the Wisconsin Public Education Network prior to his election to the Assembly. Representative Phelps, how are you?
I'm great. Good to see you this morning.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here as well. You know what? Before we get into the education aspect of it, maybe your ears were burning, but Dan Schaefer was mentioning you, and we were talking about his column about races to watch, legislators to watch from now through November of next year in the districts that were close in the presidential race and with new less gerrymandered maps have led to more competitive races, and maybe Democrats have a chance to even take the majority in the legislature. And obviously you've been noticed right out of the gate, not just for the conditions of the district, but your work ethic and all the knowledge of education that you bring into this race. So I wanted to get your impression on being listed as one of those, you know, races to watch already, whether like me, you know, you become a one and done, one term, thanks for serving, moving on. Or, you know, if folks there think you've got legs and they're going to be around for a little bit, kind of nice to be on a list of people getting a little extra attention, I think.
I guess so. I mean, we got plenty of attention last year because it was really the first chance mathematically that the 93rd had to flip in 14 years because of how gerrymandered it had been. And so people were already kind of watching and paying attention. And I had the privilege and luxury and exhaustion of having a competitive Democratic primary and then a competitive general election. So it was a very busy year and it worked out. And I think our work is not done because, as I'm sure we'll discuss momentarily, we did not quite get the majority. We gained 10 seats in one swoop. That's pretty good. But there's a pretty hard limit on the amount of policy work you can get done when you work in the minority party in the legislature. And so, I think next year we will have some agenda items to really go back to the voters with and sell. And I think it's going to work out even better for us. But we have to keep the 93rd in our control in order to get that majority and actually get some things done, including investing in public schools, including rural public schools in the 93rd. So I look forward to talking to everybody about that.
Well, and you have a majority that is much thinner for Republicans and yet is still trying to create that illusion of full and total control, rather than seeing, you know, perhaps more bipartisanship than some folks would have expected with more competitive districts, which takes us to the Assembly Education Committee on which you serve. And certainly, I'm sure I framed the question similarly at the start of the session. And how did you think the Assembly Education Committee work would unfold? And I'm going to put it in those same terms again this time around. How much of what you're seeing put in front of you by majority Republicans on the Education Committee is substantive and directly related to improving, you know, education quality in our classrooms versus what I would call sideshows, but other people just might say, you know, issues that aren't as relevant to the direct education of our kids? How would your 30,000 foot view of the committee look so far?
Oh, yeah, it's a busy one. And so we've gotten plenty of content in the first four and a half months here. And it is not substantive. That's my observation. The luxury of being a new person in the legislature is that I can kind of walk around the Capitol with a flashlight and go into nooks and crannies and say, on behalf of the people of Wisconsin, why doesn't anything good ever happen around here? Like, what's going on? And a big part of it is just the agenda setting. So there are proposals introduced that would be substantive, that would help make it easier for kids to learn and teachers to teach in Wisconsin and here in the 93rd. And then what happens is that the majority decides what moves forward and what doesn't. So, for example, on the Education Committee, we have 9 Republicans and 4 Democrats, which does not reflect the nearly 50-50 legislature. So ungerrymander the maps, gerrymander the committees to maintain your control. And so it was always kind of an open question. Is there going to be more bipartisanship with the closer assembly makeup? Or are they going to kind of behave exactly the same way as they did when they had that manufactured one-party rule? So far, they're doing the latter. And so on that committee, we've gotten several full days of bills to hear and then debate and then release, and then they make it to the floor. Those bills have been about things like whether we call our test standards basic or developing. That took many, many hours of taxpayer-funded time. We decided whether teachers should be allowed to use students' pronouns. We have discussed whether cursive should be mandatory. But proposals to do things like invest in school lunches for all and make them and reimburse school districts so that families can spend less on groceries and every single child can be fed at school. That was proposed in January, has not even been given a hearing yet. So the agenda setting by the majority party is one of the main reasons that so little good stuff gets done in the Capitol. If I could shine a light on that for the community, it's not great news, but it is true.
And I would take it a step further and seize on what you said there about some good bills like school lunches for all kids, not even getting a hearing. And so when we talk about a group that still is maintaining the illusion of all-encompassing power, it's one that looks at a bill like that, and they could say, well, let's give this thing a hearing right away. Let's you know, we don't want to pass it. We think, you know, kids getting school lunches is welfare or whatever their position is. But the fact that they won't even give a bill like that a hearing kind of gives away the game and of where they want to keep 100% of their focus, which appears to be on all of these culture war issues and things like that, rather than anything substantive. But I'll try to be fair here. As you've looked through the budget process, as you looked at what Governor Evers proposed for education, what you would like to see versus what the Republicans have done in the Joint Finance Committee, have you been encouraged by anything that you've seen there so far as the budget starts to become put together by Republicans?
I'm so glad you asked that, Pat, because it is a perfectly fair question, and I wish I had a better answer. it's perfectly logical to say, you know, maybe a lot of the important public education issues belong in the budget. So maybe we don't need to talk about standalone bills until after the budget process is over. So the governor proposed the budget bill, and then Wisconsinites were invited to 4 public hearings at the committee, the Joint Finance Committee, to voice where they stand on that budget bill that the governor had proposed. He had proposed doubling the state's commitment to special ed funding, which is way, way, way below where it needs to be right now, and even further below what they fund private schools at. He proposed increases to per pupil aid. He proposed things like the Healthy Meals, Healthy Kids program, teacher apprenticeship and grow your own programs to address the teacher shortage, and peer-to-peer suicide prevention grants in schools, really important stuff that got overwhelming support at those public hearings before the Joint Finance Committee. Everything I just listed was taken out all at once by the Republicans on that committee after hearing from Wisconsinites in their first executive session on the budget, where they removed 612 items from the governor's budget bill. So at this rate, the bill that they give us as the legislature out of that committee to vote on the biennial state budget will not look anything like the budget that the governor proposed. And on education issues, it zeroed out almost every popular proposal that Wisconsinites overwhelmingly said that they actually wanted to see in there.
Which actually presents both an opportunity and a challenge for Democrats, who can either shrug their shoulders and, you know, the voters just get the impression of, well, what are you going to do? You know, they threw it out. That's what they do. They're in the majority, as opposed to now they're on record saying these are good ideas and we don't like them. And so, you know, we Democrats are going to say to those Republicans, these are good ideas and so forth and so on. So, I mean, you've got, even in the setback of having these things thrown out, it seems like you have a messaging opportunity going forward.
Yeah, I think it's really bold for the Republican members of the Joint Finance Committee to do this again. They've done it to the last few budgets Governor Evers put forward, but at that time they had manufactured a 2/3 majority in the legislature. But now they have colleagues like me and many others, 23 new Democrats in the Assembly alone, who represent competitive districts. They themselves represent competitive districts, many of them who didn't before. And, you know, in my case, I represent a lot of rural residents of Western Wisconsin who don't have a private school around. They're not interested in spending their taxpayer funds on private education. Their public schools have had to go to referendum just to stay open. In many cases, the public school district is the largest employer in these communities, and they have a representative who's going to tell them the truth about what's happening in the Capitol and why their public schools are struggling. Republicans haven't really had to face that in recent sessions, so it's awfully bold and dangerous politically for their future to continue to take out popular and much-needed proposals from the budget without further consideration after hearing from people, because now they have colleagues who are going to hold them accountable for it. And frankly, you know, nobody has asked me or anybody else to sit back and use only a fraction of our power here. I think if there's one thing that's clear after the 2024 election and 2025 state of politics at local, state, and federal levels, people want their elected officials to use as much power as they can muster to fight for them. And so, you know, I'm a first-term member. I'm not on the Joint Finance Committee. I'm not the governor. There's a limit to how much power I have, but whatever I have, and however many loud microphones I can find to sort of speak the truth into, I'm going to use it, because that's what people are asking us to do.
Well, and that's what we appreciate having you here on our homeroom segment, and, you know, throughout the course of your work to help people understand it's not just what's in the final budget bill, but all of this, you know, if you want to call it sausage making, that's fine. But it is important to know that there were some good, healthy ingredients that were set to go into the sausage, and we're getting a whole lot of filler and garbage instead. State Representative Christian Phelps is a member of the Assembly Education Committee and is a first-term Democratic state rep from Eau Claire. Christian, good to talk to you as always. Hope you have a great day.
Yeah, great to talk to you too. Thanks all for inviting me.
You bet. Take care. Hey, we've got daytime baseball across the Civic Media Radio Network today. It'll be the Brewers versus the Orioles going for the sweep in that series and looking for their first four-game winning streak in I don't know how long. But coverage begins at 11:35 on stations in Richland Center, Oshkosh, Racine, Kenosha, Park Falls, and Hayward. Coming up in our 8 o'clock hour, we will be talking to Devin Remicker, one of the candidates for State Democratic Party chair. We'll talk to Joe Zepecki tomorrow and William Garcia coming up on Friday. Melissa Baldoff in our next hour as well. Remember, you can follow my team at upnorthnewswi.com and, of course, mornings here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Barrio. Senator Tammy Baldwin presses EPA head Lee Zeldin on Great Lakes funding at a hearing on Capitol Hill. The exchange came just 1 week after Clean Wisconsin, the Healing Our Waters Coalition, and Alliance for the Great Lakes met with Baldwin to stress the importance of fully funding the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. Zeldin ended up going on record saying the protections would be funded. Wisconsin's muskie season is here. Northern muskie season opens May 24th and runs through the end of the year. This is the 70th anniversary of the muskellunge being proclaimed our official state fish back in 1955. The biggest muskie ever caught was in 1949 near Hayward, weighing in at more than 69 pounds. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome in to the final segment of the Civic Media Spotlight. This week, the House passed their reconciliation bill by one vote, likely heralding in the significant Medicaid cuts we've been hearing about. Todd Alba welcomes on Civic Media News Northwestern Wisconsin Bureau Chief James Kelly to recap the struggles Wisconsin already has with rural health care and how this will likely make it far, far worse if it passes in the Senate.
We are rolling on the river. We are here live on location on Black River. As a matter of fact, the beautiful shores of Black River in Black River Falls, Wisconsin. Todd Alba along with Zomer is back at the world headquarters down in Madison. Glad to have you along. One of my other favorite people here at Civic Media. We're always proud and happy to have him join us. He joins us from the beautiful plush studios in downtown Chippewa Falls. It is James Kelly, our Northwest Wisconsin Bureau Chief for Civic Media News. James, how the heck are you?
Well, I'm good. You know, there might not be as much sunshine inside of the office here as you're getting broadcasting from outside, but there's less snakes. So good trade-off for me.
Exactly right. If you didn't join us at the top of the show, Todd set up the Starlink satellite here right next to the Black River because there was no obstructions and it was a cement surface. What I did not know until after I got it set up is the pipe right under the cement surface contained a nest of snakes. So we're seeing, hopefully they will stay about 10 to 15 yards behind me until the end of the broadcast. I'm not sure how I'm going to get the satellite dish back, but
yeah, if you start sounding maybe a little off, maybe like you're falling asleep at the wheel here, we'll get EMS out there for anti-venom.
Let's start a little closer to home, though, James. We talked right before the break here. Last night out in Washington, D.C., the House of Representatives passed the reconciliation bill by one vote, the slimmest of margins. It basically took a Democrat dime, not made up, actually real, in order to pass this bill last night. And I think what's interesting to me, James, is the implications of what this means across the state of Wisconsin. And right before the break, we read a quote there from U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, Democrat of Wisconsin, saying this is going to really have a real impact when it comes to health care And I think in particular, rural healthcare, nobody's covered this subject better at Civic Media than you, James, about what has gone on in Eau Claire. Just remind viewers again of the already healthcare concerns and crises you folks are facing in Northwest Wisconsin and what this might be.
Yeah, so a little over a year ago, the HSHS hospitals in Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls both closed, as did a number of Prevea clinics in the region, just taking away, you know, general primary care from residents in addition to the two hospitals. Now, especially in Chippewa Falls, that's problematic because it was the only hospital here. It also operated as the county morgue. So the county had to come to an agreement with another place to kind of temporarily serve as the morgue and kind of get them up to that code. There have been plans for new hospitals. They're going to take a while. The soonest would be the partial reopening of St. Joseph's later this year if that's deemed financially viable. But once those announcements started coming out, my first question to pretty much every elected representative from here and even Governor Evers was, if Medicaid is cut, as we've heard many, many times, is there a way that these hospitals can survive on their own? Because the reason the HSHS hospitals closed a year ago was because they were not getting enough in Medicaid reimbursements. That's from Governor Evers, the secretary of the Department of Health in Wisconsin, and pretty much every nurse, staffer, anyone at the hospitals that I talked to during the closing, every single one of them said, we are not getting enough in Medicaid reimbursement. So if Medicaid money is not going to be coming in for these new hospitals, it creates a little bit of a financial hiccup. Governor Evers referred to it as they'll be playing behind the ball from the start.
Yeah, and it's so interesting to me. Obviously, I would say concerning as well, but so interesting. I mean, where we are here in Black River Falls today, we're literally maybe five blocks away from the Republican Party headquarters, very prominent storefront down here. You see a lot of Trump flags in this part of the state still, a lot of signs are still up for Trump and Vance. And it gets back to this question, James, of people voting against their own self-interest. And in your reporting and just living in the Chippewa Valley area, what's your sense of this? Has this really hit people yet? People that might have voted for President Trump and Vice President Vance in November, has it hit them that this is going to have real implications for the Chippewa Valley area in terms of health care? Or do you think this is a situation where they just don't feel it yet?
I actually think the first people that it really did hit was the farming community here. When contracts were being canceled and, you know, you have to very carefully plan how you're going to, you know, operate your farm throughout the year for when are you going to get the best crops? When are you going to get the most crops? When is that going to be ready? When is this going to be ready? So when I think some of those contracts and uncertainty about SNAP, which gets a lot of local food, like that really started to, I guess, not wake people up, but make people start questioning like, hey, this is something that we have to address because we're making those plans now. And Medicaid is no different. I've been to, I can't even count how many town halls in the last 2 or 3 months that are specifically based on Medicaid and the type of coverage that especially people with disabilities or people who have children with learning disabilities or are maybe autistic and nonverbal and need a very significant amount of hands-on care. It's these people who are going to suffer first. And then as the situation continues to get worse and you might see some more rural hospital closures, more people are going to have to go farther. EMS services are going to be stretched out further. It's going to be more of a rough situation. I think when people start to see, well, the hospital nearest me just closed because they weren't getting enough in Medicaid reimbursements, I think they will then realize that maybe this was not the best move.
All right, James, let's move on from rural health care, which, of course, is, to me at least, I think one of the biggest implications of this huge reconciliation bill. What other news could we share with people across the state? What's going on in beautiful Northwest Wisconsin here?
Yeah, well, this is appropriate since you're right there by the river. Later last week, the city of Hudson got crews out onto the St. Croix River and removed another one of those abandoned boats that now lawmakers are looking at some pretty serious legislation to levy up to $10,000 in fines and maybe 9 months in jail for this.
Really? What's going on with these abandoned boats in Wisconsin? Can't people steer anymore? What's going on?
I don't know. And you know what? The neighborhood that I grew up in on Long Island was I was on the North Shore, and it was like pretty much right near the beach, so we had kind of a marshy area in our neighborhood. And for the longest time, there was an abandoned boat out there, and we always said, we're going to go swim out there one day and see what's really in that abandoned boat. We never did. Our parents said, you will definitely die of some weird disease.
All right, come on back. More James Kelly on the other side. We're on location in Black River Falls. It's the All Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Wisconsin. We're rolling on the river.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, we'll rebroadcast some recent clips as we take time off to honor Memorial Day and those whose sacrifices gave us the freedom we continue to defend.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
In the words of Joseph Campbell, a hero is someone who has given his or her life to something bigger than oneself. 101.1 FM and 540 AM WAUK would like to recognize members of the United States military who gave the ultimate sacrifice in defending this country's freedom. This Memorial Day tribute is made possible by Thunder Bay Grill, serving top quality steaks, Cajun specialties, and seafood. Perfect for gathering, relaxing, and socializing. Thunder Bay at Highway I-94 and 164 in Pewaukee.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Wendy Gillette. 5 years ago today, George Floyd died at the hands of Minneapolis police. Civil rights attorney Ben Crump spoke at an event in Houston.
We will not turn back. Justice for George Floyd. Say his name.
George Floyd.
Say his name.
George Floyd.
Say his name.
George Floyd.
The Reverend Al Sharpton was also in Houston.
You have to vote in the midterms. You got to vote this year and keep on voting. You can't fight for George Floyd legislation if you're not going to elect George Floyd type legislators.
The Texas state legislature has passed a bill requiring public schools to post the Ten Commandments in every classroom. KRLD's Chris Fox.
Texas State House Republicans passed Senate Bill 10 by a vote of 82 to 46. State Senator Phil King authored it.
We want kids to see that there are certain standards for morality.